I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back. Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. We're live on NBC Sports Washington, presented by EMP 180 Weight Loss, the standard for weight loss in D.C. area. The Alexandria location now open, taking appointments. Joining us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline is best-selling author, Washington Post columnist John Feinstein. He's brought to you by Golfdom, located in Tysons, Virginia. We're at golfdomgolf.com. You can visit today to experience the best in golf on and off the course. Golfdom, live the game. Good morning, John.
Morning, fellas. How are you?
Hello, so, John. All right. We should lead off with what in the world is bothering John Feinstein. I want to flip the script, though. I did this a couple weeks ago. What are you loving in the sports world? Jason's not here, so we can flip the script.
What am I loving in the sports world? You know, it's interesting because if Jason were here, his first question would be, what did I think of Tiger Woods yesterday? And I didn't think anything because I was in Louisville yesterday doing a speaking thing, and I'm on my way back now. So I saw none of the golf. But my honest answer would be the golf tournament that interests me this weekend is the Web.com final. Because that's going to determine 25 guys making it to the PGA Tour next year. And that is a much bigger deal to me, I know not to most people, than who wins the $10 million among a bunch of millionaires playing in Atlanta, whomever it might be.
Eric Compton is
one of the guys who has a chance. He's 36 going into this weekend. And he's got to make the top 25. And I hope you remember his name. He's the guy who had two heart transplants and then finished tied for second at the U.S. Open 4 years ago. And he's a really, really good guy. So I will be paying rapt attention to the Web.com finals this weekend, not so much the Tour Championship, which is, I know, what most people will be watching, especially if Woods stays in contention.
By the way, you're in Louisville. We're going to have Rick Pitino on the show in 40 minutes.
He will talk about how he's done nothing wrong.
Right. What would you ask? Because I don't want to ambush him. I've done that in my career. I'm over that. I'm not going to try to just make him say some hot question. What's a fair question?
Well, fair question is, you know, you say that your one mistake was trusting Andre McGee in the Madam thing. And aren't you responsible for that? You hired him. You gave him the responsibility that allowed him to do what he did. You know, don't you have to take responsibility for that? And they'll probably say, yeah, I take responsibility for that. But, you know, my mistake was entrusting him and blah, 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 blah. And so that I would ask him that. And I would also ask him if he has said in the book, I understand he said that he still wants to coach again. But since then, in interviews about the book, he said he's done.
Right.
And I'd say, you know, which one is it, Rick? Huh. If a great offer came along, would you coach again?
Yeah, I do kind of want to ask him about that because you got guys like Jim Calhoun, you know, he's coming back. He still just loves coaching. Go coach in the NAIA or Division III or something. You can definitely still coach.
Yeah, no, well, he can get a job,
yeah.
He could probably get a lower-level Division I job if he wanted it. The question is, having been at the guy I coached in, I think, 7 or 8 Final Fours, I'd have to go back. One
seven,
at Providence.
Yeah,
and won two national championships, one of which was stripped. He's in the Hall of Fame. Does he want to go back and do that? And that's the real, you know, do you want to go back and Jim Calhoun's coaching Division III, as you mentioned, and there have been other coaches who have come back after, you know, getting fired or getting into trouble, whatever, and coached at the lower levels of Division I. Dave Bliss, for crying out loud, is coaching in the NAIA. Do you want to be one of those guys? And I honestly don't know the answer.
Well, I would think it would be a way to kind of hopefully clean up your legacy a little bit. Leave on a good note. I would rather leave on a good note.
I think that's what this book is about. I think this book is about him trying to vindicate himself. And you know what? The people who believe Rick Pitino, the people who believe Rick Pitino will continue to believe him, and the people who don't believe Rick Pitino will continue not to believe him. I don't think he can change that.
I think the only way he could clean it up at all.
Who believes Rick Pitino? I look at him and I think greasy used car salesman.
Right.
That's what I think.
Well, the fact is that you know, Rick has had issues. When Rick was at Hawaii, his first job, Hawaii was investigated, okay, back when he was like 25 years old. Rick, when he was at Providence, and he's not the only coach to do this, Nick Saban is another one, declared up and down that he was not leaving Providence, he was not taking the next job, and then like 3 days later took the next job. Mm-hmm. So you're right. It's not like he's Dean Smith, where if Dean Smith said something, you could pretty much bank on it being true. Rick, his nickname is Slick Rick, and it's partly because of his hair, but also because of who he is.
Joined by best-selling author,
I would
John
recommend
Feinstein.
Not bringing my name up, by the way. So.
We won't. That's okay.
Although he did. I will say this. He did once play in my charity golf tournament, the Bruce Edwards event. He and his son Richard came. When I was doing the Patriot League book, and one of the guys I dealt with was Ralph Willard, who was one of maybe Rick's closest friend in coaching. And Ralph said to me at one point, you know, the reason you and Rick don't get along is because you're the same guy. You know, you're both ball busters. Mm-hmm. And he told Rick that, you know, he really liked me and thought I was honest. And Rick actually walked up to my brother at Winged Foot at a member guest and said, you know, I know John thinks I don't like him, but I really respect his work. And I thought the Last Amateurs was a great book. And so we had kind of we smoked a peace pipe for a while, but I've certainly been critical of him since all this broke out at Louisville.
Right.
Talking to best-selling author John Feinstein, Washington Post columnist. We had your colleague, Barry Zwerluga, from the Washington Post on yesterday, and he had an interesting article about the fan base here with the Washington Redskins. How do you see this playing out the next couple years? They brought in these executives. They want to change the perception, make people think that it's easier to get to the stadium. The stadium experience is better, but the team is still mediocre. Yeah. It seems like that's the toughest battle, that winning is the best antidote. But can they kind of change things on the edges before the team starts winning?
Well, you can, certainly. I mean, we've all known for years that for most people, putting aside the team's play on the field, the experience of going to that stadium has never been a good one. The traffic in and out is terrible, and to park anywhere near the stadium. And I don't know if you guys experience this, but when you go to M&T Bank Stadium for a Ravens game, the people there are clearly in go out of the way to.
We're struggling with your cell phone there.
Hold on for a second, John. See if you can call him back.
I have to reconnect. I don't know exactly where he was going with the M&T. I've been to one Ravens game. Well, went there with the Gov, and
when you go there, it's 75,000 Ravens fans.
And going in and out was pretty easy.
It's easy, very accessible.
Yeah,
it's easy to go in and out.
Like boom, you're on 95.
Yeah, but that's the location.
Yep.
But also the fans are like they're real Ravens fans.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Bunch of hillbillies. They all look like Valdez.
Bunch of camo pants.
Yeah, so many camo pants.
Purple
camo
pants.
Is that still really a popular thing?
Oh, yeah.
That hasn't faded over the last few years?
In Baltimore it is, Gage. Go ahead, John.
He's wearing a camo hat again. Like,
yeah, I know. Look who's talking about camo.
It's not purple, black, and gray.
Thank you. John, you were making your point about the M&T experience.
Yeah, I think there aren't that many cell towers in Kentucky, I don't think.
Yeah.
But when you go to M&T Bank Stadium, clearly the people who work there are instructed to go out of their way to be polite, to be nice, to welcome you. That was never the case at FedEx Field. And maybe now they're realizing that you should do those little things, that those little things can help when the team isn't that good. Now, the bottom line is always going to be how good is the team. If the team wins, the stadium will sell out again. People jump back on the bandwagon. People will not dislike Dan Snyder as much as they dislike him now. But when you're not good, it's the old thing Bob Knight said to me years and years ago, that he said, I know as long as I win, Indiana fans will say I'm eccentric. If I stop winning, they'll say I'm an embarrassment.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true throughout sports? If you win, people will forgive you your sins. I mean, look at Urban Meyer at Ohio State, for crying out loud. If he wasn't 73-8 when all this broke out, he'd have been fired. And the same is true with Snyder's team, because he doesn't get the benefit of the doubt from anybody because he's never been nice to anybody.
Yeah, but I think people already...
And it's an unpleasant stadium experience, as you said.
No, and it's all true, but I think that people will still... I think it's too baked in. They're always going to hate Snyder as long as he's associated with the team, even when they're winning.
If the team wins, they'll come back.
But the team wins, they'll come back. They did in 2012.
The thing that struck me, though, John, is watching the game last night between the Browns win with Baker Mayfield, and sure,
right,
Baker is exciting. The Brown Stadium looked packed to me, and that's a team that has suffered and lost as much as anybody.
First two games are sellouts, according to Drab.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I think Mayfield has given them some hope. I think maybe the Hard Knocks thing helped them somewhat.
Yeah.
Because they came across well. Hugh Jackson came across well. Mayfield came across, I thought, very well. And maybe that helped them a little. But also, the Browns have a different fan base than Washington. Washington has always been a winner's town. You know, look, everybody's in love with the Capitals now because they won the Stanley Cup. But, and that's the kind of sports town Washington is. The Midwest tends to be different. The fans in Cleveland, the fans in Pittsburgh, you know, you look at the fans with the Cubs all those years when they were terrible. They still sold out Wrigley most of the time. Fans of the Bears. It's a different mentality. But also, there is no reason to feel negatively towards the people running the Browns other than the win-loss record. Here, that's not the case.
Well, I don't think Jimmy Haslam is so lovable.
No, but he's not. But I think that he has not. I know, again, from going to the stadium there, that the stadium experience in Cleveland is much better than the stadium experience in Washington.
I'm sure.
The city. You can park. You know, the traffic isn't nearly as bad. So I think that helps too. But also, the Browns fans have been famous for years for the fact that they come out and go crazy for their team, no matter how bad they are. And the last 2 years are certainly proof of that.
Right.
They had, when they played the Ravens last year, second to last game of the season, because I looked this up when I was researching a quarterback book, I think they drew 62,000 when they were 0-14.
Right.
That's pretty impressive.
That's remarkable. Yeah.
Any thoughts on the Caps? They're in their preseason little swing here. They're not that far away from the regular season,
October,
right?
October 3rd.
Yeah, I mean, it's coming up.
They raised the banner.
What is that, 10, 11
like
days
weeks
away?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're getting close here. Expectations, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I would think they expect to be very good. And we all know the playoffs are a crapshoot.
Right.
And you know, the great thing about the Stanley Cup playoffs, as we've discussed before, is any of the 16 teams can win. If the goaltender gets hot, I mean, the Kings, what was it, about 6 years ago, it was 2012, they got into the playoffs the last day of the regular season, and I think it might have been in a shootout, and they won the Stanley Cup. So you make postseason, and the Caps will make postseason, you have a chance. And they proved that last year. Last year, nobody thought that last year was going to be the year they won the Cup going into the season. But you know, they had the whole thing with the goalies, and then Holtby got hot when he got back in after those two losses to Columbus. And they got going in the right direction, and they finally got past the Penguins. And I had said to you guys for 3 years that I thought if they ever got past the Penguins, they'd win the Cup. And they got past the Penguins, and they won the Cup. And I think this year will be similar. They will have a chance to win the Cup. They could also get knocked out in the first round. That's hockey.
Do you think the fan base will be patient if they struggle?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. The fan base, the one fan base in Washington that has always been patient and loyal and showed up is the Caps fan base.
Yep. True, but now they've tasted victory.
When was the last time they had a non-sellout?
Right, but
and now
a real sellout.
If they're down four, no, they had real sellout.
No, that's what I mean.
Yeah, but let's say they get down 4-0 to somebody one night. you're not going to hear boos because they can look up and see that banner.
Yep.
Right.
Whereas the football team got booed before halftime and came in 1-0, by the way, off a very impressive win. Right. No, I think Caps fans, hockey fans in general, are more patient, number one. And number two, when you got a Stanley Cup banner hanging, it makes the atmosphere completely different. And I'll throw this at you. How different would we feel, would Washington fans feel right now about the Nationals and their failures this year if there was a World Series banner inside that stadium?
Oh, you feel much better. You'd be okay with it.
Yeah. I mean, you'd be disappointed. You want to do well every season. But you'd say, hey, you know, we got the 2012 World Series banner that it's still look at. How great was that?
Hmm.
Yeah, and I use 2012 for a specific reason,
yeah,
by the
we
way.
Know.
Right.
By the way, John, how excited are you about the news that came out this week that Congressional will be hosting the 2031 PGA Championship and the 2036 Ryder Cup?
They also announced about PGA things, too.
Yep.
I've already told my son, Danny, that if I'm still alive in 2036, his assignment will be to wheel me around for that Ryder Cup.
Right.
How old will John be in 2036?
I'll be 80.
80?
I'll be 80 if I'm still around, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny because Congressional's got an older membership, and I'm actually surprised the enthusiasm with which they greeted this. I was at the club the day of the announcement, and people were coming up to me and saying, isn't it great? And I'm going, what are the chances any of us could be alive?
Right. Exactly. Hey, we were thinking the same thing.
I mean, it's like, you know, I wrote to my friend Julius Mason at the PGA, and I said, okay, if I'm still alive, you got to get me a handicapped parking spot.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. Very important.
Working the parking angle.
Parking is so important.
I always work the parking angle. You guys know that.
Of course. Yeah.
All right, got to go. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, John.
All right, fellas. Talk to you next week.
Have fun driving through the bluegrass state. I'm sure it's fun.
Yep. I'm almost to West Virginia.
Very good.
See ya.
Yeah. All right. See you, buddy. Louisville's a great town. That's where my kid's going to college.
Oh, I'm sure it's great. I just wouldn't want to have to drive there.
No, you fly.
I'd rather get on a bird and be there in an hour.
My son's going to play lacrosse at Bellarmine University. It's 5 minutes from the airport. Mm-hmm. It's downtown Louisville's right there. They got, obviously, Bourbon Row or whatever the hell
it is. I don't know. Shocker, another city in the States where I've never visited.
You would like it. It's very mellow, cool town.
Never been to Kentucky. The Commonwealth of Kentucky, I believe.
All right, it is a Redskins Friday on the Junkies, presented by the one and only Sportsbook Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races. J.P. Finley covers the Redskins for NBC Sports Washington. Joins us at 9:20. And as we mentioned, Rick Pitino at 8:40. Don't go anywhere.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back. Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. We're live on NBC Sports Washington on a Redskins Friday. Presented by the one and only sportsbook, Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races. Big Fat Winner is going to be hanging out there tomorrow at 11 o'clock. Right there by the sportsbook. I believe Skip on at Big FN Winners on Twitter was wondering how many people were going to be meeting him at the Chuck.
Yeah, they won't be broadcasting. They'll just be gambling.
Yes.
And throwing some chips around.
Hanging out at the Sportsbook Hollywood Casino. So you can do that if you're a fan of Big Fat Winners or a fan of gambling and watching college football on a Saturday.
I believe Tommy DeLay, Grant and Danny producer, is making the road trip to the Chuck to splash some chips around.
Oh, really?
Yes, he is.
Nice.
Very nice.
Yep.
He usually just likes splashing chips in daily fantasy.
Well, who doesn't?
But he's going to hang out in the sports book?
Yes, correct.
Is he a consumer of the Big F and Winners podcast?
Well, he's responsible.
He's in charge of all Entercom podcasts.
Yeah.
So he's become a fan.
I would guess so.
He checks it out.
Well, I know he's required to listen to everyone.
Oh, yep. He is?
Yes.
Really?
I think he likes throwing cash.
It's different than just posting it. I didn't know that mean he had to listen to it.
I think he likes throwing cash.
Yeah, oh, he definitely likes gambling.
Maybe small stakes, but he likes.
Oh, he likes to have a sweat.
I mean, he does 100. He does 100 daily fantasy teams.
Yeah.
Yeah, now some of them are for as little as a quarter
still,
per contest.
But, the pure effort to crank out 100 lineups on a Sunday morning.
Sure.
That's him and Cakes, like during pregame shows, all they're doing is talking about wacky daily fantasy lineups.
Yeah, we're trying to find angles, trying to find contrarian plays, any way to try to make a little extra cash.
All right, so we wanted to get into the Redskins a little bit here, and you can certainly call us on the Hadid Carp Clean Lister lines, although we just have a few minutes before we talk to Rick Pitino. 800-636-1067. You can call us on the Hadid Carp Clean Lister lines. As I see this game, it's where the rubber meets the road for the Redskins defense, EB. What do you think happens? You've got Aaron Rodgers, who, by the way, didn't practice yesterday. Unless it's a whole rope-a-dope and the Packers say, we're just going with Kaiser.
I don't think that matters.
Rodgers is supposed to play without practicing, essentially. Packers, we know, have an offense where it's highly reliant on Aaron Rodgers because when he's not in there, they don't move the ball.
Yeah.
It's not like their skill position players are great. Devontae Adams is solid, and I guess Jimmy Graham had a good second game.
Devontae Adams is more than solid. I think he's knocking on the door of being an elite receiver. Like, okay. Look at his numbers over the past few years.
So far, though, he hasn't done much.
Not this season.
So far, he's only got 13 catches
for
152
yards. But Rodgers is at the level where he doesn't have to practice.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
He just shows up on Sunday.
I agree.
And usually guys, like, if you don't see them practicing on Thursday and Friday, there's always that, if they're not practicing Friday, they're not going to suit up for Sunday. I think Aaron Rodgers gets that exception.
Of course.
That he's going to be there on Sunday.
But what I mean by rubber meets the road is that the Redskins defense, through 2 weeks, number one in yardage, number two in points. The defense, all right, maybe we thought that it got pushed around a little bit by the Colts offensive line, but they actually only gave up 21 points.
And they created a couple turnovers.
Yeah, two turnovers.
And you could make the argument they did their part. They did enough to probably win.
They're not putting up gaudy sack numbers.
No.
I mean, it's actually pretty anemic, but they're keeping them in games. Now, they play the Cardinals in week one. So what are your expectations against the Packers?
I think they're going to play a lot better. I think it's going to be a tight football game, but I'm nervous down the stretch. Like, are they going to be able to make key stops when they need to? You know, Aaron Rodgers banged up, and he's still got a quarterback rating of 111 this year. You know, he's playing at a very, very high level.
Led them on the comeback in week one against the Bears and had them in position to win against the Vikings.
And maybe this is
the Vikings have a really good defense.
I know a lot of people are focused on the fact that Alex Smith is not pushing the ball downfield. He's not really incorporating wide receivers into the attack. Maybe this is not quite as effective as in week one against Arizona, but Green Bay has not been good at stopping the run through the first 2 weeks. They're allowing right around 4.8 yards per carry. So this might be another 20 carry effort for Peterson if they don't fall in a hole early. Now, if they go down like 17-3 late in the first half, that game script goes completely against Peterson and trying to pound the ball against this defense. But I think that it might be more run centric than a lot of people think.
Although their pass defense isn't ranked very high either. Kirk
got
for over 400 yards.
Well, that's because they got old shredded. Trayvon Williams as a corner.
Well, they got shredded by Diggs and Thielen. Probably the best 1-2 punch in the
Trubisky
league.
Trubisky looked okay against them in week one.
He was all right. Now, the Redskins don't have a wide receiver tandem like Diggs and Thielen. Doxson and Richardson are not going to strike fear into the heart of that secondary like Diggs and Thielen.
No, but I expect the Redskins to be able to move the chains. I always do. I always expect a Jay Gruden-led offense to be able to move the chains, go up and down the field. It's just a matter of how effective are they going to be in the red zone. That's kind of been the issue with this team the last few years. But I think it's going to be a very close game. I'm going to give the nod to the Packers, of course. I'll always bet on Aaron Rodgers against the Redskins. But I definitely think it's like when we had Hoffman on, it's kind of one of those inexplainable things. I think the Redskins, they could surprise us.
I think they're
going to
win.
Surprise us.
I think they're going to win one out of the next three games. I don't know necessarily which one. Wouldn't be surprised if
they have to win at least one of the next three.
But I would bet on 1-2 in the next three.
If they win one of the next three, that puts them at 2-4. Is that right?
No, 2-3.
2-3. Yeah, right. Which I guess you're still kind of in it. Let's go
They're tied for first, EB.
Let's go to Aaron in Suitland. Aaron, what's up? What do you expect?
Hey, good morning, guys. Redskins by 17,
ooh,
and they will only win two more games after this game for the rest of the year. If you recall, not last year, the year before, we blew them out at FedEx, and I think as a fan, we were looking for that type of offense ever since. So the Redskins will win by 17, but they won't win any more than maybe 4 or 5 total for the year.
Didn't we lose them in the playoffs, though, later that same season?
I don't have a great memory for schedules.
I think it was
years.
That same season.
Last year, the Redskins started off 2-1, though, right?
Let's go to Mo. They lost
those
the opener.
Back-to-back wins.
They lost
against
the opener.
Yeah, they beat the Rams and the Raiders, I believe.
Yeah, the Raiders, and we thought that was a big win. It turns out it wasn't really that big a win. Let's go to Mo in Largo. Mo, what's up, buddy?
Good morning, fellas. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hey, DB, great math skills there, trying to figure out the remainder of the,
thank
the
you.
Record if you go 1-2 for the next.
Come on, man. Math is hard, especially early in the morning, Mo. Give us a pass.
Yeah, right. Go ahead.
But as far as the game, I foresee a shootout. Judging by the numbers, I mean, Green Bay is favored by 3 points, and it's not like they're not going to score. So I see something in the neighborhood of like 27-24, something like that. Probably lose towards the end of the game. But personally, my interest lie on the over 45 for the total. Mm. And, you know, I'd like to give y'all a little pick for the week. So this weekend, I'm looking at TCU -3 over Texas.
All right, fade that one, Valdez.
By the way, the total in this game has come down 2 points since it opened. It opened at 47.5. Now you get it at 45.5.
Mo, definitely a degenerate gambler.
Absolutely.
I'm bitter that he hung up.
The interesting thing about Mo is I don't believe he was a gambler until he started listening to our show.
Is that true? We got him into it?
Well, that might be true. You're welcome, first of all, Mo. We're broadening your horizons, okay?
Gambling,
but
I wanted to ask him
better. That, but I'm pretty sure he never bet.
What I wanted
until
to ask him
show a few years ago.
If who's going to be the Redskins star of the game?
If Cake seems to be leaning towards AP in the ground attack.
No, I'm saying that I wouldn't be surprised if I saw that. I don't know if that'll actually come to fruition because I was not impressed with what I saw last week.
I have guys I'll bet against. Starts
Doxson.
With the receivers.
Yeah.
Doxson, Richardson.
Richardson is a lot more involved in the game plan than you realize. He's basically the number one wide receiver, the way they use
him. Right, I'll go out on a limb with that. I'm going to say if I have to pick a star of the game, it has to be Jordan Reed. You have to get him more involved in the offense than he has been. He wants to redeem himself from the fumble last week. I'm going to have him as your star.
I'm
going to
say Jamison Crowder. Jamison Crowder is another guy way underutilized so far this year.
I think the easy one is just go with Alex Smith because it'll encompass all of them. All right, we will talk more Redskins coming up at 9:20. J.P. Finley will join us. He covers the Redskins for NBC Sports Washington. But coming up next, legendary college hoops coach Rick Pitino right here on The Fan. Welcome back. Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. We are live on NBC Sports Washington. You want to follow along on TV? We'll get back into the Redskins-Packers matchup at 9:20. J.P. Finley will join us. He covers the Redskins for NBC Sports Washington. But joining us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline, legendary college hoops coach Rick Pitino. He's got a new book out, Pitino, My Story. Takes you through the biggest recruiting scandal in NCAA history and his 40 years of coaching basketball. Good morning, Coach.
Coach.
Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah,
how's everything?
Yeah, we're doing well. Thanks for doing the show. You know, I noticed that in the book, some of the excerpts that we read when it first you were first promoting it, you talked about probably being done coaching. And now you're doing interviews and saying, yeah, you're definitely done. Question for you, why? You know you could definitely get a job, maybe at a lower level Division I. You could do NAIA. You could do maybe Division III like Coach Calhoun. I would think you'd want to maybe end on a better note to solidify your legacy a little bit. Why are you done?
Well, you know, legacy is an interesting word. I think that your legacy spans over a period of time. You know, it's growing up, three of my idols growing up were Joe Paterno, Vince Lombardi, and John Wooden. Those are the three people I admired most. Well, if you look at Joe Paterno, you remember the ending and so on. But if you really study his legacy, Joe Paterno was a lot more than that. John Wooden, you know, a book comes out and says, well, Sam Gilbert got him all the players and he did this and that. And the man I knew had nothing to do about Sam Gilbert. I didn't think of him that way. So the legacy, I'm not going to let some misfortunes and the things that happened were very misfortunate. I was not involved in any way. I say that in the book. That doesn't mean that I wasn't the head coach. I'm disappointed because I've mentored 30 assistant coaches the right way and have gone on to do great things in the game, but I know it's my time to get out. It's not that I don't love coaching. I eat, sleep, and drink the game all the time. I just got to be involved with the game in a different capacity.
Coach, when these things, you say misfortunes, the allegations, whatever, you know, came about with your program, a lot of people were saying, well, how could a head coach not know what's going on in his program? You may not have known every detail, but in a general sense, how could you not know? What do you say to those people?
Well, I go in great detail in the book. I mean, the most obvious thing is if a player or a graduate assistant was doing the wrong thing in a dormitory, the last person that's going to know is me. They're going to do everything humanly possible, from the players involved to the person involved to the people involved, to keep that away from me. They knew right away that they would all be off the team. They would all be fired. So I would be the last person. It's quite obvious. And the other thing is, as I say in the book, the dormitory is named after my brother-in-law, my best friend in life, who I lost in 9/11. I built that dormitory as a shrine to him, something that would live forever. So as you read the book, the answer is obvious. I would know nothing. And there's no way I could have known anything, because the assistant coaches didn't know. Security didn't know. 6 players on the team did not know. 20 managers didn't know. Mm-hmm. So I'd probably be the last person. But that doesn't make the reprehensible behavior right, not knowing. I mean, there are times in life where you don't know what your children are doing, and who's closer to your children than a mom or a dad.
Right. That's definitely true. What about the issue there with the Bowen kid? And I know that you were saying that you didn't have any knowledge of any payments that may have been alleged to have either transacted or promised. The sneaker companies, you said it was all them, it wasn't you. But you had to know when a kid like that kind of falls in your lap there last second that something must have been going on, right?
Not at all. In my lifetime of 30-plus years of being a head coach, only one time in my life, one time, did someone come up to me, a family member, and ask me for an illegal inducement. Now, that spans 30-some-odd years. I have never in my life given $5 to try and entice a player to come play for me. It just wasn't my thing. I'm not chastising anybody who had done it, and even though it's illegal. That wasn't my thing. I didn't recruit guys that were leaving in 3 or 4 months. I recruited the Gorky Zhangs, the Donovan Mitchells, the Russ Smiths, the Terry Rozier's. They weren't even ranked in the top 50. So I had a whole different way of doing things. Doesn't make it right, doesn't make it wrong. But I never gave an illegal inducement to a player and never thought about that. So when this kid fell into my lap, the way he explained it was he wanted to go to Arizona. Then 2 players came back. Donovan Mitchell was going pro, and it was an opportunity. He drove 6 hours in a car with his parents. We went out to a sort of like a Chick-fil-A for lunch. He paid half the tab. So there wasn't anything that made me think there was anything wrong. And I've been with Adidas for 16, 17 years, and they haven't lifted a finger to help me. So why would I ever think they were going to do something like that? And to be very honest with you,
yeah,
he's a very good basketball player, but he's not Donovan Mitchell.
Right.
So even though he was a highly ranked basketball player, I wasn't sure how good he was. I've seen him play one time. And although he had a nice reputation, as you see, he wasn't drafted in the first or second round coming out of high school. Now, I do think he's a terrific young man who did not know about what was going on. Now, I don't have any proof of that, but I don't think his mom knew, and I don't believe he knew. And I think he will become a very good basketball player in time. He's got good size. He's 6'8", handles the ball, shoots the ball, and I wish him nothing but the best.
Talking to the legendary coach Rick Pitino, he has a new book out called Pitino, My Story. Of course, everybody knows he won 2 national championships. But, of course, you coached in the NBA. And I wanted to ask you kind of your take on this. A lot of people are saying the way that the game has changed in the NBA with so many three-pointers being shot, they credit Mike D'Antoni a lot for that fast-paced game. But I remember when you first coached the Knicks, all of a sudden the Knicks were jacking up a ton of three-pointers. And same thing with the Celtics. You were kind of ahead of the curve there with taking threes versus twos.
Well, the first year in college, the three-point line carried us to the Final Four with Billy Donovan. The first year it was put into effect, we led the nation in three-point shooting. And then I left Providence, and the New York Post called it Pitino's Bombinos because we took so many threes. But it's not that I was ahead of the game. I just felt that obviously, if you can create the three-point shot and take a high-percentage shot, and equally important, stop the other team from shooting a high percentage or taking a volume of threes, you're going to be way ahead of the game. And it led to a lot of success for me at every stop along the way. And it's a weapon right now where there's no longer a 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 position anymore. It's fours and fives are shooting threes. Cousins now is stepping out shooting threes. Durant's a great three-point shooter. So the low-post player, the Dwight Howard, going back to, obviously, to Wilt and Russell and all those greats, there's really not that triangle offense of having that center in the low post and everybody working off that center is really not the way the game is played any longer.
Coach, you know, JP mentioned the two national championships, and I see in your Twitter bio, you know, you have the two national championships there. I guess you must feel like nobody could take that away from you, right? Even though the one in Louisville has been vacated, you obviously feel different about that.
You know, it's not vacated. They took a banner down and they fined you. You can't erase history. Mm-hmm. You can't take a championship away. Now, you can take a banner down and you can fine the team and whether you think it's just enough. But you can't erase history. We won the championship fair and square. Six players watching a striptease act in a room is certainly improper behavior. But that's you don't take a championship down for those type things. That's not an extra benefit where it was a performance enhancing thing where you're using steroids or you're cheating on an exam and you got into school illegally. None of that was. It's not nothing enhanced their performance to help them win a national championship. So it's kind of ludicrous in my estimation. And the players right now, six of them are suing the NCAA over defamation. And we'll see how that turns out.
What happened, Coach, to that big investigation? Remember, it was about a year or so ago when that big report came out, like on AP or whatever they had it, and you know, like all of these coaches were implicated. We thought something was going to happen. There was in Arizona. They mentioned Larry Nate. All these guys. Maryland's mentioned in there, and most of it based on the sneaker company stuff. But then we haven't heard anything. What happened to that?
Well, the trial is going to happen October 1st, and there's a chapter in the book. It's an interesting chapter. You guys probably have seen the Showtime performance with Billions. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that at all?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a chapter in the book called Billions, and it's all about the Southern District of New York, which is the same thing in the show. And they're the ones that started this. A scam artist named Marty Blazer started this whole thing and said, look, give me a lighter sentence, basically, and I'll deliver all these college coaches who are cheating. Well, what they came away with was 4 years of investigations, of using the FBI, of enticing assistant coaches to take money, and all these other things. They've come away with two Adidas reps, an AAU coach who kept the money, and they had to drop the indictment against him because he didn't give it to a family. He kept the money that the FBI gave him.
Right.
And then they came away with four assistant coaches. So they've spent millions of dollars of getting FISA warrants and wiretapping, and the trial is October 1st, and they haven't come away with much. Now, maybe there's a lot more to it. But right now, the indictments are coming up in a trial October 1st, and I don't know what's become of any of it. I'm not sure that we should be using the FBI with all the problems we have in this world to try and bring down assistant coaches.
Joined by the great Rick Pitino, legendary college hoops coach, has a new book out, Pitino, My Story, 40 years of coaching basketball. I'm wondering if you can point to a particular era which was the most fun for you, because we all were born in 1970, so we grew up in the era when the Big East was dominant. You had coaches like yourself, Louis Carnesecca, P.J. Carlissimo, John Thompson, Rolly Massimino. Like, they were just heavyweight coaches going against each other each and every night.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. I tell a story in the book about a Big East meeting with Rolly Massimino. Boeheim and P.J. set me up. We weren't making much money back then. It was a ball deal, McGregor ball deal. Rolly just won that great national championship against Georgetown. And PJ and Boeheim said, look, last year we all got $2,500 for using McGregor basketball.
Mm-hmm.
McGregor now wants to give Rolly, Boeheim, and St. John's $12,500, and the rest of the guys they want to cut off. Rolly's going to get up there and say, I cut a deal. We're going to get $12,500, but the rest of you, I got you up to $3,500. Why don't you say that we all should get the same? I said, well, why would I say that? I'm new. And Boeheim says, Rolly loves the pros, and you're coming from UB Brown, who he loves and respects. He'll respect what you're saying. I said, I don't know, guys. I'm new. I'm young. I don't know if I should do this. And PJ chimed in and said, no, you definitely should do it. So Rolly stands up and pontificates that everybody's going to get $3,500, where the other guys are getting $12,500. The only reason I bought into it is Boeheim was going to get less. So why would he want to get less? So I stood up and said, hey, Rolly, I think we all should get the same. Congratulations on winning the championship, and we all should get the same. Well, he went off on me like you wouldn't believe. You young effing so-and-so, who the hell do you think you are? And we almost came across the table, had blows against each other. And I see Boeheim and PJ laughing hysterically, and they totally set me up. And it was one of the funniest things. John Thompson couldn't stop. He was smoking a cigar. He was choking on a cigar. And everybody in the room was laughing. The meeting had to get broken up. And those days were so good because there wasn't a lot of money, but there was such, not only camaraderie, there was such intense competition in the Big East. And I loved every second of it.
Coach Pitino, we know one of your outside interests is horse racing. One of our producers is a big-time degenerate horse racing gambler. He wants your Breeders' Cup picks coming up in early November. Do you have any early leads?
You know what? The one thing I notice, all producers and people behind the scenes on radio broadcasts, TV broadcasts, are all degenerate horse people.
Yeah.
I don't understand that.
I owned horses too, Rick.
Yeah, you did. He owned a horse.
You ever heard of Mama Grizzly?
Mama Grizzly. It didn't do so well, though. Do you have any picks?
No, not yet. Obviously, it's we're about a month away or so, but I'm in the horse business. I used to own about 50% of most of my horses. Now, being out of coaching, I have about 2%.
Somebody said that you owned a horse called Party Dancer. Is that really true, Coach?
Well, here's the way media sometimes gets carried away. Yeah. I'm on the West Coast. I own a horse, and the partner I've never met in my life, the trainer says, do you want to name him? I said, no, I don't want to name him. But tell my partner, whoever it is, he can name it. Never met the gentleman. I'm wrapped up in basketball, and I go out there, and it doesn't even dawn on me to name. I go to see the horse run. He's his third race, and I go to see it, and we're in the winner's circle, and somebody writes an article, Pitino's insensitive, naming a horse Party Dance. And then it dawned on me to name. I met the owner that night, and I said, were you poking fun at me with this?
Right.
He said, look, Rick, I have no idea that you're even a basketball coach. I don't follow sports. I put in three names because I love Tina Turner. And I put in three names with Dancer, all in because of her. And I came up with Party Dancer because of Tina Turner, and she reminded me of a party dancer. I just loved her. And I said, oh, okay. He had no idea who I was. They write a whole article about this name as if I had something to do with it. And it just shows you how things turn out like that.
Yeah.
Hey, but you're in the winner's circle. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, we won the race.
What's that like?
Must feel nice.
All right, Coach.
Thank you, Coach. Appreciate it. Good luck with the book.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right.
Pitino, my story, 40 years of coaching basketball.
Yeah, that went okay.
I just went back. Yeah, I think so.
I mean, you know, you're not going to try to just, like, completely grill them. You know, that's just rude.
Well, it was fair and entertaining.
Yeah, we're not investigative reporters that are breaking down.
We're not
down
journalists.
What he did.
Are you freaking kidding me?
I'm not going to go through all the details of the dumb case. I mean, he does bring up some points. You go, this is true.
Kind of sounds believable.
I mean, if you have a bunch of strippers in, are you going to go run and tell Coach you had a bunch of strippers in the.
You can tell he's getting up there in years. He's calling it a striptease act. Yes. I mean, no, who would do that? An old codger.
And he did have a good point, too, to vacate the national championship because some guys got some strippers. It was not like it helped them play. Unless you say it was used as like a recruiting inducement.
Right. I mean, how are strippers going to help you win a national title?
I've said this for two decades. You can go ahead and strip championships. That means nothing. You've already lived that experience. Like, if all of a sudden it would kind of suck if Maryland's college basketball championship was taken away. But I'm sorry, I already lived it. Already got the
joy. If I found out that Taj Holden was banging hookers all year, And I, you know, they took it away.
Right. Byron Mouton.
Yeah, one of the assistants was setting them up with the hookers.
Juan Dixon was illegally recruited.
You'd be so bitter if they walked into the lobby at Xfinity and grabbed the trophy and took it out of the lobby.
Oh, that would be they cracked the glass.
Yeah, wouldn't that be terrible?
Threw the net in a bonfire.
Horrible scene.
We'll get back to the Redskins at 9:20 on a Redskins Friday, presented by the one and only sportsbook Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races, with J.P. Finley covers the Redskins for NBC Sports Washington. That's at 9:20 here on the Junks.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.